from the BizTalk Radio Network, broadcasting from AM and FM stations around the country. Welcome to the Small Business Administration award-winning School for Startups Radio, where we talk all things small business and entrepreneurship. Now, here is your host, the guy that believes anyone can be a successful entrepreneur, because entrepreneurship is not about creativity, risk, or passion, Jim Beach.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another exciting edition of School for Startups Radio. It's the weekend of March 1st. We've got a great show for you today. We're going to talk about hyper-local marketing. We're going to talk about decisive intuition. We're going to get an update on the economic situation and find out if our businesses are going to continue to grow. So let's jump right in. First guest today is Ed Ukanu. He is a hyper-local marketer. Ed, welcome to the show.
I am doing fantastic. And how are you, Jim?
I am very well, Ed. Thank you. Looking forward to getting lunch again soon. All right. So the last time we had lunch, we spent the day talking about indoor billboard network. I see it all over the place now. Tell our listeners what it is.
Well, first of all, before I get exactly into what indoor billboard network is in a couple of seconds, I just want to say what we've tried to create, because every question that I suppose I'll answer today will come out of this. We started this business to create a digital platform that has different digital assets that will help and enable small businesses to project their brand and their name out in their localities where they do business. Because as you very well know, most small businesses derive a bulk of their revenue from anywhere from 5 to 10 mile radius. So how do you make sure that your brand is represented well in that marketplace? And more importantly, create an affordable platform for these small businesses. So one of them is the Indoor Billboard Network. Indoor Billboard Network is nothing more than with the fact that we've taken the proven concept of the digital billboards you see on the highways, on the streets, and we've brought them indoors to locations like coffee shops, health fitness clubs, restaurants, cafes, places that have a lot of traffic and dwell time, what we call dwell time, which means people are going to be there anywhere from 15, 30 minutes to an hour or longer. And the idea there is very simple. We're a one-stop shop. We create the ads. They're just as good as good quality as TV ads, like you're watching a regular TV station. The difference is that these ads are created for our clients, who are primarily small businesses. And it enables them to have a platform that they can afford to brand their business and advertise their services and goods.
And Ed, I don't mean to be a jerk about this, but I want to make this distinction, right? Are we going to see these billboards in a bathroom or in a more public part of a cafe, for example?
Yeah, we're not in the bathroom at all. We have nothing against ads in the bathroom, but we're not in the bathroom. Our ads run on 55-inch flat-screen TVs, strategically located or placed in these establishments where you walk in, you're going to be staring at it.
Exactly, right. So I just wanted to make sure that people understood that, right? I think this is a whole different level above that bathroom ad. I don't like those.
Absolutely. Thank you for that opportunity.
So I've seen, I don't know, maybe 4 or 5 of them around town. How are you doing so far in terms of penetration?
We're doing very well. When we started this, our initial market our pilot market was Sandy Springs. And now in Sandy Springs, we've been able to establish 25 locations, reaching over 155,000 people on a monthly basis that come through this host locations that we have our screens in. So we're particularly very excited and happy with our progress thus far.
Yeah, that is impressive. And then the ads, do the establishment themselves get an ad? Is that part of the deal? What does that ad deal look like, and who's buying the ads? How's that going?
The establishment gets an ad that plays both inside the store and an ad that plays in other locations of their choice. And that goes back to the earlier question you asked about the placement of our screens. Because the ad is playing on those screens, they always give us the best location we can ask for in the establishment. And then we turn around and then sell local advertising to the local businesses, whether it's the restaurants, the gyms, the chiropractor, the dentist, the business owner that's trying to reach that population or has a need to brand their business, the insurance agent, and the pest control guy. I mean, I can go through a whole gamut of different businesses and industries that benefit from this. So any business that has a need to reach that demographic and that population, those are the people we are reaching out to for advertising.
Okay, and can you give us any idea of the price point?
We basically average somewhere around $35 to $50 per screen per month. And per screen per month means per location per month.
Okay, so if I wanted to do all 25 throughout the entire city, it would be just simple math?
It would be a simple math because we're targeting small businesses and we want to keep it simple.
Okay, I don't get a discount if I buy into the whole network?
If you get a discount, that's why I said it ranges from 35 to 50. If you buy the whole network, you're probably going to be paying around $35 per screen per month.
All right. And then how much visibility would I get for that? Does it show once an hour, or how does that part work?
It shows once every 12 minutes. So on every screen, we're guaranteeing you 2,000 times a month. Your ad will run or play 2,000 times a month. That is a guarantee because we have 12-minute loops, and we don't do any more than that. So once that screen is filled with enough ads for 12 minutes, we're done. We will not accept any more ads.
All right, cool. Well, I understand the business, Ed, and I like it. It makes a lot of sense to me. And if I were a business like a cafe, I would do this in a heartbeat, of course. Give us some idea, and don't tell us anything that's none of our business, but how'd you get the idea for this? How did you get the funding? You know, give us a little bit of the history of the business from an entrepreneurial standpoint.
All right. I've owned three businesses before this. And one of the things that I realized quickly in all the businesses I've started and sold is that the small business man or woman has very few options when it comes to a brand, an affordable branding and advertising platform. And you can go through the entire spectrum from newspaper to TV to radio to internet marketing to social media. You look across all that, not too many small businesses can afford any one of these mediums. And yet they're faced with the same challenges everybody else, every other type of business is faced with. So what do most small businesses do? They basically network themselves to death. They jump from one networking meeting to another. So we want to change that. We've brought a platform to the marketplace that every small business owner can afford, that enables them to brand their business, get their name out, and continue to do all the things they do, because the power of what we're doing is incredibly compelling. And I'll tell you why I say that. When you brand your business on our platform, it helps anything else you're doing in a social media format or radio or even cold calling. And here's how. Because the person who's constantly going to that gym or that cafe where we have our screens, they, when they need your services, and assuming their natural reaction is to go to Google and Google you, and you're lucky enough to be on page one, if you're one of those companies that are there, who do you think they will call? They're going to call that brand they're familiar with. So that's what we're providing. And if you, the other area to look at it is most marketers look at the different touch points that provide, you know, what we call engagement channels. Those touch points could include computers, televisions, or phones, just to name a few. But when customers are on the go, you know, conducting their daily lives or daily business, the number of channels available to reach them drops dramatically. limiting marketers or any type of business to basically billboards. And in my case, indoor billboards, because we catch them on the go. So we're not trying to interrupt them like most of what happens on social media.
That's so true, Ed. That's so important. You're not interrupting me with my ad, with your ad.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
We just fit into your daily lifestyle. That's
right. While I'm standing in line to get my coffee, I get to see the ads, and it's actually entertaining. This is the weird thing. It's actually entertaining because instead of standing there staring at nothing, now I have something interesting to look at, and it's better than an ad for Levi jeans, which I already know about. This is an ad for something right in my neighborhood that could change me and affect me. Oh, I didn't know that business was there. Oh, that's cool. Or, oh, there's a concert series coming up downtown. These ads actually are an entirely different function, and I look at them entirely differently. That's really ingenious of you, man.
I appreciate those kind words, Jim. Thank you so much. You actually get it.
We will be right back. Again, we are speaking with my friend Ed Ukanu about his hyper local advertising business. We have been talking about one of his products, which is the Indoor Billboard Network. Ed, I'm really interested in number three the most, but let's go to number two first so we don't end up running out of time. Tell me about SandySprings247.com. And to let everyone know, Sandy Springs is the fourth or fifth largest city in Atlanta. We are really just a suburb of Atlanta, but we broke off so we could control our own taxes. Ed, tell us about the app.
Well, the app is, it's obviously a mobile platform. As I mentioned at the beginning of this radio in session, I mentioned the fact that our goal was to assemble digital assets that cater to the small business owner. So what we've done with Sandy Springs 24/7, it's a mobile app that basically connects the entire community of Sandy Springs, the business community, the residents, the nonprofit, you name it. Everyone's on this app. And the idea is simple. It allows regular citizens to talk to each other and communicate to each other. But more importantly, it allows the business owners to be able to geo-target their prospects. Say, for example, I can place what we call a virtual flag, nothing more than a virtual billboard, in essence, anywhere in Sandy Springs. Put a radius around it of maybe 500 yards to 1 mile or 5 miles. And everyone who, and with my messaging, it could be an offer, could be a buy one, get one free, could be a stop over for lunch, get 10% off, or whatever it is that you're selling. It could be your service or whatever it is. And I can place that virtual billboard anywhere in Sandy Springs that I choose, put a radius around it, and anyone who has that app comes through that radius. When they hit the perimeter of that radius, their phone will be alerted. That app will display that message for them. So it's also another powerful way for our local businesses here in Sandy Springs to reach out to the community and offer them their wares or their services.
I love that idea. And so I think the question that I'm going to get about this one, Ed, is how do I build that in my locality? If someone's interested and wants to work with you for their municipality, how could they, is that possible?
Absolutely. I just need them to call me, because one of the things we're trying to do with that is to get it out. We've tested it in Sandy Springs and we love what we see. So we're looking to engage other partners to take on other locations, Buckhead, Roswell, Alpharetta, you name it, the entire Atlanta metro area.
Duluth, Honolulu, Anchorage.
Absolutely.
No, I mean, not just places in Atlanta, right? This would work for...
This will work anywhere in the country. Yes.
And it's a business opportunity for someone to start one in their own city and be an entrepreneur almost with a plan. They can just follow along with what you're doing and use your tech, right? With a fee?
That's the whole idea. Absolutely. Yes.
Well, I actually have this one on my phone and use it, and so I'm getting more and more addicted to it, Ed. So that one works for me as well. But again, as I said a few minutes ago, what I'm really excited to ask you about now is your third business. I have not seen this anywhere else. This is a cool one, The Node, N-O-D-E. It's a Wi-Fi thing that turns your Wi-Fi at your business. They were back to that cafe. So we're back to the cafe where he's got the screen. Now he can use their Wi-Fi and turn that into lead gen. Tell me about that, Ed.
Fantastic product. The Node is a product that enables, as you stated, any establishment that currently offers Wi-Fi as just a basic customer service tool. Basically, most establishments offer you Wi-Fi and they get nothing in return for it because everybody else is offering Wi-Fi. But we've created this lead generation tool that basically, it's called a node, but basically what it does is it provides the same Wi-Fi, but helps the business build an email database. And how does that work? It's very simple. Most people, when they use the Wi-Fi, they either sign in or log in, and the node will basically capture whatever they log in with, which most times it's going to be any one of the following, either the Facebook or email or LinkedIn or Instagram. They can log in with any one of those things. And once they log in, we're able to know, okay, Jim just logged in. So Jim is, it's now in the database. Here's the power of the node. We have 21 templates, and we don't have time to talk about all of that. But let me just talk about one of the templates that is in that in the node that is set up once and forgotten about. So the owner of that establishment, we're going to ask them questions around when does a customer become an at-risk customer? So if you think about, let's say, a coffee shop or a donut shop or a burger joint, if someone is not back there in a week or two, that's considered for them, most of them, that's considered an at-risk customer. So we can program in the node and say, if anyone doesn't come back within 2 weeks or within 1 month, depending on what the owner of the business says, we want you to send them this coupon or this offering, 10% off, buy one, get one, whatever that offering is. And so the node is doing this in the background. And it's actually able to track when those people come back. And the metrics that the node provides, besides what I'm telling you now, it's incredibly powerful for the business owner. It tracks things like dwell time. So, for example, imagine if I'm a lunch place and the key to my business is how fast I turn my table. So when that owner looks every week at his portal and sees that his, you know, average wait time is about an hour, that means he's not turning that table fast enough. So the node is capturing all this incredible data. But besides the capturing of the data, the fact that the node can actually become that lead gen that turns the lead generation into actual revenue for you, because that ability to send that template email out to that person that brings them back because they now have a coupon for their next lunch or their next dinner or yep. whatever that
yep.
is.
Yep. Makes a lot of sense, Ed. I like it. Yeah. And how is that business going? How has the reception been?
The reception has been very good. The challenge I've had, and that's where I'm at now, is that we've wanted to test a lot of these things and now scale it. So we're now at the point of scaling the business because our pilot program for all of them, we've gotten incredible results from. So now we're looking to scale, and I'm not sure this is the best time to put this here, but we're in the process of hiring a bunch of, you know, very, very skilled and talented folks that are going to help us scale the business. And that's where we are with it.
All right, Ed, I love it all. It makes a lot of sense to me, and I just see it around, and I think it's working. How can we find out more, get in touch with you, follow you online, all that stuff, please?
We can be found online. First of all, our website is ibn-ga.com. We're also on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, And more importantly, we're on our screens. We drink our own Kool-Aid.
Thank you, and we will be right back. Welcome back to School for Startups Radio. Again, thank you so much for being with us. It is a beautiful 1st of March weekend. I hope it's beautiful where you are. Here in the Deep South, we just keep getting more and more rain. If you're an entrepreneur, you should start building us arcs because we're going to need it. Anyway, great, great weekend, and I hope you are, number one, recharging your entrepreneurial batteries, and number two, going out there and getting some work done for the week ahead so that you'll be ahead when we get started next week. So we got a great guest coming up now. We're going to speak with Rick Schneider. He is the guy behind the Decisive Intuition. We're going to learn about trusting your gut, but we will do that in just a second. And in the bottom part of the hour here in about 15 minutes, we're going to speak with Gene Goldman of Cetera. They're one of the largest financial services companies out there. And he's going to give us an update on the economy, where things are going with trade negotiations in China, and how it's going to affect us and our small businesses. Anyway, most importantly, I want to remind you of our goals here. We want to make everyone an entrepreneur. We're going to teach you that creativity is really cool, but not necessary. Risk is really bad and unnecessary, and you should avoid it at all costs. We're not going to spend $500,000 to start our business. We're going to spend $5,000, and maybe we can't start as cool as we want, but that's what we're going to do to be more likely to succeed. And number three, we're not going to worry about passion. We're going to reserve passion for the church, the synagogue, the mosque, and the bedroom. Most importantly, we are going to go out there and run great businesses with best practices, and we're going to keep an eye on cash flow at all time. All right, let's get back to the show. I am very excited to introduce you to my next guest. I'm very excited to welcome back to the show my friend Rick Schneider. He was on the show almost exactly to the day a year ago. He is the CEO of a company called Invisible Edge. We will learn about that. And he has just released a new book called Decisive Intuition: Use Your Gut Instincts to Make Smart Business Decisions. It is published by Career Press, one of my favorite publishing companies, a really great company. Rick has launched 3 businesses and has been an expert in training others for his entire career. His breakthrough strategies have been used on all of the major continents, Europe, Canada, Asia. Canada's not a continent. What am I doing? America. And he has been very successful as well in martial arts. Pretty cool. Rick, welcome to the show. How are you doing today? Welcome back.
I'm great. Thanks again for having me. Great to be here with you.
All right. So congratulations on the new book, Decisive Intuition. I like the title because it's an oxymoron, right? Decisive and intuition don't go together, Rick.
So that's what they say, right? And so exactly, like, that's one of the things that really caught my eye about the title also, is there's actually a healthy tension between being very decisive but also being very intuitive. And I think what I find is most leaders usually are very decisive, but they haven't allowed time to really sit with the problem or reflect on something. And sometimes they can make too many errors jumping in too fast. Or you have the leader who's very intuitive and they're just kind of feeling for what wants to happen next, but they don't take action. And so there's something very powerful about really sharpening your ability to be decisively intuitive.
Aren't most people strongly one or the other of those two?
Yeah, I do think there's a spectrum, and I do find that most people seem to be pretty headstrong and make decisions very fast without allowing themselves to really, you know, feel through something. Or people who are more procrastinators, or they just kind of sit with something for a long time, or they just need to fill things out before they're ready to make a choice. And so there are usually two extremes, and I'm trying to help both sides come more toward a middle where you can actually have the best of both worlds.
Ooh, this is weird. You were describing all of that, so I was listing for me, of course, listing for you to describe me. And you did use two things that I would consider myself and others also would consider me. I am a huge procrastinator. But secondarily, you also said that on the other end of the spectrum is someone who makes decisions quickly. I'm that guy. I make decisions very quickly. I just procrastinate on, you know, everything else. Is that part of it, or am I going to implode from conundrums of hypocrisy?
Maybe a little bit of that, but
that's the title of my new book, by the way, Rick, is Conundrums of Hypocrisy. I have no idea what the book is about, but I don't think it matters.
No, and really, you know, the essence of this book is really about, and there's a lot of research backing this up in the last 10 years or so around neurobiology, which is amazing, that we actually make better decisions when we include our inner signals and cues with the data and analytics. So we actually make more of an integrated decision when we're not just looking at the spreadsheet, but we're also including our experience and our gut instincts and all of that.
All right. How do we trust? You know, I get gut instincts and half the time it's just completely wrong. You know, that girl wants you to ask her out. She really likes you. Yeah. And then you ask the girl out and she slaps you in the face, Rick. And so I blame you for that.
Right. So here's what I say is, don't make intuition your God and don't make it your devil. Because you can always say, hey, intuition made me do it. And you can blame your own awareness and your experience on your quote unquote intuition. But it really starts to have you look at, you know, what really is your intuition? And are you really reading the signals and cues, or are you just reading what you want to see? Right?
Yeah.
And so that's where it gets really interesting.
How do I know the difference? You know, I mean, because my intuition has lied to me bold-faced many, many times, Rick.
Yes. And so this is where it gets interesting is that really your intuition, or is that your conditioning? Is that, are you in a certain kind of emotional state that's hijacking your show, but you're not aware of that? And so here's an example. Let's say I'm overexcited about a new project. And I have this sense that it's going to work out and I should get, you know, investor funding. And is that really the case, or am I really missing things because I'm so overexcited and I'm not actually in a more settled, balanced state where I'm really listening for those signals and cues because I already have my agenda, you know, 20 steps ahead. And so one way you can tell the difference is if you're in a very emotionally charged state, you're probably not coming from intuition. Intuition is usually drama-free. It's usually very simple, like, oh, I need to go left. Or, oh, this job isn't right for me anymore. Or this hire isn't the right fit for our team. But it's not a big drama. It's not a big soap opera. Usually when emotions get involved, they become very dramatic and very charged. And so that's one way that I make the distinction in the book is, for example, if you're getting a strong no about a situation, is that really your intuition, or are you just scared?
So, Rick, how fast is intuition? So, you know, you can fall in love in an instant. I do believe that. Maybe that's just lust, but anyway, it's real fast. What about intuition? Is intuition in the first 7 seconds, or is it, you know, I've been talking to this person for an hour now, and I'm just not going to buy the stock that they're selling? You know, my gut after an hour says no. How fast does intuition work or kick in or let you know?
You know, they say the research out there right now is that we make assessments of people and situations within 7 seconds. But it takes the mind a lot longer to kind of catch up with that. And so the idea of this book is really the more that we get out of our conscious, rational mind and open up to our full experience, and our full bodily experience, we're starting to become aware that we're getting data all the time. So imagine you're in a team meeting and you're picking up on all the signals and cues around you of everyone in your company. But a lot of times it might not register, or we don't know to pay attention to that, or we just simply are ignoring or overriding what we're actually picking up on. And so imagine that intuition works that fast, where you're processing information from your subconscious mind literally within the first 7 seconds of meeting people.
Yeah, I think that's what makes more sense to me. That's the way I feel like it's happened. And then I think in reverse, and I'm like, ooh, damn, they judged me in 7 seconds, and I wasn't smiling. you know? And so, you know, no wonder they didn't want to go out on a date with me, right? You know, so good grief. And I'm wearing these ugly clothes and I'm a moron. So
Jim, I think we're coming across your second book here.
Yeah, I'm a moron.
No,
starring by Jim Beach. Yes. Well, Rick,
the dating. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. Jim Beach's dating guide. How about that? Rick,
right,
congratulations on this. This is really interesting, and I can't wait to see how it sells for you. Again, the title is Decisive Intuition: Use Your Gut Instincts to Make Smart Business Decisions. Rick, how do you want us to find you online, follow you, and buy our copy?
Yeah, you can buy Decisive Intuition wherever they sell books near you. It could be Amazon, Barnes & Noble, the usual suspects. And you can also find the work that we do at Invisible Edge at invisible-edgellc.com. And my handle on social media is Rick A. Snyder, S-N-Y-D-E-R.
Fantastic. Rick, thank you so much for being with us, and I'll talk to you in exactly 1 year.
I can't wait for our next anniversary. Thanks for having me.
And we will be right back. Welcome back. We are excited to have you with us. Thank you so much for being a loyal listener. Very excited to introduce you to my next guest. His name is Gene Goldman. He is the Chief Investment Officer and the Director of Research at a company called Cetera Investment Management. Now, his role there is to go and provide unbiased financial advice for their clients, to go out and do the economic research data, to provide information about the economy, financial markets, asset allocation, mutual funds, returns, all of that kind of stuff. He's been doing this for over 24 years and has been at some of the biggest and most prestigious companies out there. Gene, welcome to the show. How are you doing today?
Thank you, Jim. Good morning. Great. I'm doing great. Thank you for that introduction.
I am optimistic about the economy. I'll tell you, a little around Christmas, I got a little scared, but since then, I guess I am feeling the same investment wave that's driving the markets. I'm feeling really optimistic right now. Am I normal? Fitting? Do I fit in? Am I matching the data you see? What are you seeing out there?
I think you took the words right out of my mouth. We are optimistic too. So, you know, you think about last year, you know, it's always good to look back in history, but last year, you had earnings growth up 20% in the S&P 500. GDP is going to be close to 3%, unemployment near a 50-year low. But stocks were actually down last year. They were negative last year. And we told our advisors, our 8,000 advisors all across the country, listen, it's a good buying opportunity going into 2019. And we are optimistic. You know, we feel optimism is in three reasons. You know, the Fed is going from hawkish to dovish. Trade war will be resolved very soon, in our opinion. And number three, you know, the concerns, you know, if you talked about around Christmas, there was a concern that we'd have a recession in 2019. The data is too strong. We cannot have a recession in 2019. 2020 may be a different story, but 2019, we don't see a recession at all.
All right. What kind of GDP growth are you estimating for 2019?
Sure. For 2019, you're looking at, you know, GDP is definitely going to come down a little bit, especially as you see the impact of, you know, how long the trade war lingers. You see the impact of rising rates compared to where they were last year. You see the impact of energy prices. But at the end of the day, we see GDP coming in, you know, maybe about 2.3, 2.4%. It's still a moving target. In the sense that there's lots of factors involved with it. But at the end of the day, you know, consensus is about 2.4%. And, you know, we think that's pretty right. Pretty good.
Right. And that would be fantastic for the country. I mean, you know, 3% would be nice, but 2.5% is still pretty impressive and would set us up for a good election season, I think, in terms of just watching everyone go crazy. Why do we think that there could be a recession in 2020 then? Would it just be a cyclical slowdown, or what data indicates that might happen?
Sure. And then going back to your point about 2019, about 2.4%, that will definitely be good news. But the good news is that if the current economic expansion, if it's going to reach its 10th birthday in June of this year, so again, 10 years, it will be the longest economic expansion since the end of World War II. So that's good news. To your other question about 2020, I think the rising impact of wages are going to affect corporate earnings. Also, manufacturing slowing down. Also, weakness in Europe. Europe is really, it's really in dire straits in terms of, growing populism, in terms of Brexit, in terms of weaker economic data. A lot of bad data out there. But at the same time, it's good valuation. So we think all of this is going to be impacting. Plus, our dollar is really strong. A strong dollar makes our outside U.S. revenues weaken. So again, that's something we're watching, which we think could impact and could potentially cause a 2020 recession. If you do look at the Congressional Budget Office, their expectations for GDP, and Congressional Budget Office is a bipartisan group, so not Democrat, not Republican, they're estimating GDP about 1.5 to 1.7% in 2020. We think that there's a chance that could be a little lower, if not having a recession.
Gene, so we've alluded to the trade war. Let's dive into that a little bit more. Let's see, Trump coming home from Vietnam right now. I heard he's supposed to meet with the Prime Minister of China at Mar-a-Lago soon. Is that true? And talk to me about why you're so optimistic about the trade war ending.
That's a great question. So we have been optimistic about the trade war ending since late last year. And there's many reasons. So number one, the stock market and both the U.S. and China definitely weakened. So you saw Shanghai weaken last year. And you also saw the S&P 500 down 13% in the fourth quarter. President Trump is very focused on the stock market as an indicator of how he's doing as a president. Second of all, we saw some weak economic data in December in the U.S. There's many reports you can point to. China has had some weaker economic data. The third point is that President Trump wants to run for re-election in 2020 on a platform of a stronger economy. The trade war is not helping. So that's his concern. China is the bigger story. This is even bigger. This is why we think it will really end soon. China's demographics are changing quite dramatically. So you think about China's one-child policy from over the last 20 years. This one-child policy really has played havoc on their demographics. You have a very aging population. If you look at the ratio of seniors to working population, and China is trying to convert their economy from a manufacturing economy to a consumer-driven economy, like our economy. But the problem is that you've got such an aging population in China, and some people say, China is in a battle to become either the next superpower or the world's largest nursing home. And this is like a battle going on right now. And the trade war has really exacerbated all this. This is why you've seen a lot of olive branches given from the Chinese government to the U.S. And we see it being resolved very, very soon.
All right, and then who wins? And if we win, what kind of concessions do you think that we're going to get? Any devaluations of their currency, which would help, or easing of barriers to get into China? I actually used to work for the Japanese Trade Office, Gene, and so this is one thing that I'm really, really obsessed with is Asian economies and their trade barriers. So who wins?
Obviously, I think who would win would be the U.S. I mean, I think at the end of the day, both the president and the Chinese government would go back to their people and say, we won the trade war. But at the end of the day, I think getting access, some of the change, we need to have some of the barriers in place that you alluded to before in China. Those need to be reduced. So, for example, there's, if you're an American company going to China right now, you go into China and to set up business because you want to take advantage, you want to have access to the Chinese market. But then there's all these rules and regulations in place that you have to give up your trademark and your patent to the Chinese government very soon. And that very disincents a company to move to work in China.
Glenn, we're going to have to call it right there. We are out of time. Thank you so much for being with us. Thank you for all of our guests. We'll be back next week. Take care. Bye now.